Even for long-serving federal managers, moving from one federal department to another can produce some surprises. Systems, cultures, people might all be different. Just a few short weeks into her job as NASA's Chief Information Officer, Renee Wynn has a lot of work to do. Recently decamped from the EPA, she compared the two agencies.
NASA and EPA have a lot of similarities and a lot of differences. And so let me begin with some of the differences. First and foremost, NASA has customers and users of our IT services that are not on this planet. That is not something that EPA had. And to making the adjustments to realizing that your customer base is much more scientific and technology oriented. We are, in fact, filled with rocket scientists over here at NASA. And so being able to sort of think a little bit differently on how we deliver our products and services, as well as trying to integrate innovation perhaps a little bit faster than than I'm accustomed to at EPA. And that's been one of the challenges, sort of adjusting to that here. Now, some of the similars is that the customers are demanding excellence, as they should, and that the technology office here, the technology offices between the two organizations are very similar in terms of the issues that they are challenged by as well. So there's been a lot of similarities and a lot of dissimilarities.
Now, you become the NASA CIO just at the time where the FITARA, the Federal Information Technology Acquisition Reform Act, is supposed to be carried out by agencies and reported to Congress. How are you dealing with that one? Because NASA is highly federated, I guess you'd call it, with all the centers and research areas, each having their own programs and IT systems and budgets.
NASA is definitely a lot more federated than I'm accustomed to. However, the agency in its wisdom, probably about the time FITARA was really gaining ground on the Hill, the agency undertook what was called a business services assessment of how infrastructure IT was managed. And as they got started on the process and FITARA picked up steam on the Hill, they folded in the concept of how all IT ought to be managed here at NASA. And I look at the BSA, as it's called, business service assessment, as a real gift in how to implement FITARA here at NASA. Why do I say is it a real gift? One is they started with governance and realized that its current structure could be modified to be a lot more effective and involve many more of the missions. So we're in the process of redesigning our governance processes. One thing that already existed, that as the CIO, I sit on numerous boards here at the agency that are making decisions about satellite programs and other research areas. And so the CIO has always had a seat at the table to what one would think of more of the mission side. So that was not a change that was necessary. Then we got into the focus of the BSA and saying that how are we going to not just govern it, but how are we going to buy IT? What are people's roles and responsibilities, and how are they going to be involved? And so the BSA, Business Service Assessment, really set us up to establish a plan that changes the way we manage IT here at NASA, and it aligns beautifully with FITARA. So if you were going to be facing a big change model, it might as well be everything versus FITARA and then modify and then modify. And so we're using this opportunity to really make some changes and get greater transparency and greater visibility and meet the requirements of FITARA.
And so that leads to the next question, which concerns shared services, because you do have all of these mission silos, if you will. You're the CIO, so you have some responsibility for them. Are you looking for ways where even missions that have great unique requirements can also find ways to maybe do some intra-agency shared services?
Absolutely. NASA had gone through in the HR functions and the IT help desks, for the most part, are shared services. So we are taking a look at and having the CIOs at the centers really get to know the mission side of the house. Now, many of them have been here at NASA for years and come in very well grounded and respectful towards the mission side of what NASA does, and so they've been able to move a little bit faster in terms of working with the missions to see where there are areas in terms of maybe software packages that can be delivered. You can focus on the mission side while we'll focus on delivering the software that you need. So that's been going on around the agency for a little while. My hope is that as we set out to implement both the FITARA and the BSA, the Business Services Assessment, that we'll be able to make greater strides in that area and then be able to accelerate that as well. Because we're taking a look at software usages and where we can deliver that software perhaps in a more unified manner, regardless of where someone works. And that includes software that's used in engineering. Our intent is not to control, but it's more to influence the tools that are being used, which should then set us up to greater productivity and greater use of our tax dollars.
We're speaking with Renee Wynn. She is the new CIO at NASA. And how did you find the technology environment for general business use? I mean, is it up to date, with respect to desktop operating systems and the ability to support mobility and that kind of thing?
The environment was what I would call about the same as going on in federal agencies across Washington, D.C., and actually across the United States. Some things are, I think, on our cutting edge side, and some of the things are much more what I would call in the pack. Where we're in the pack is the delivery of the email services. NASA had one email place. The places where I'd like to see us start to advance, and work has already started on this, is a single set of collaboration tools, trying to bring that in. And our collaboration tools are going to have to be focused on, we have a lot of international partners. We do a lot of work with the academia. So we're going to have to think about what are the protective of our information assets, and that is getting at the cyber protections. What tools can we use in that area that protect our assets but still allow us to have a very open and collaborative way of doing our business? And then potentially we might have to have a set of tools that are much more internally driven because we use a lot of sensitive data. And so we wouldn't want that to be inadvertently shared inappropriately with one of our partners. And so my hope, and actually, as I mentioned before, the Business Services Assessment even noted that there were a lot of collaboration tools here at NASA and that we ought to be a little bit more focused. And so we are taking a look at that now. And so my hope is that in our evaluation process, we're probably going to come down to needing sort of two sets of collaboration tools. And those tools will have to have an element of mobility in them because most of us are pretty much on the go. So we would want people to be able to work where they are. And then we would want that set of tools to have the appropriate cyber protections built into them. And the new generation of collaboration tools definitely takes protection of information assets into consideration, as well as ease of usability, as well as really focus on building a more connected society.
And I wanted to build on that question because NASA does collaborate internationally with nations like Russia and China and other places where in other realms they are sort of cyber adversaries, you might say, even though there's a lot of technological and scientific and engineering cooperation. And so how are you looking at cybersecurity in general as this environment is going to continue, and yet the cyber threat seems to get worse with every succeeding month?
Yes, that is going to be one of the trickier issues that we have to deal with here at NASA, and the fact that we are exchanging information with Russia and China. But the scientists have always figured out a way to collaborate when perhaps there are sort of geopolitical unrest in that. What we're going to probably have to do is continue to work with our partners in Department of Homeland Security and figure out how other agencies are building into, again, go back to my previous question, building in the ability to collaborate and create a protected environment for collaboration with internationally, but also we've got some threats here in the United States that are not driven by any nation states. And so how do we allow that collaboration to happen in a way that protects our assets, and maybe that our ones information that we certainly don't want to have get out in advance of either issuing it publicly, or it's information that we want to protect for a very long time. So I don't know how much more different we need to do other than to figure out where the tools are being used and how can we work on the back end of that And then use tools where cybersecurity is, as we say, baked in a little bit better. But our partners over in Department of Homeland Security have really availed themselves to some difficult issues in providing technical assistance. And as we work through a number of infrastructure issues and improve our cybersecurity posture, we want to bring them to the table, as well as other agencies that we do work with, such as the Air Force and things like that, to say, how are you doing this work? And since we have to collaborate with them, how are we doing this work and how do we stay connected with you?
As the new Chief Information Officer at NASA, Renee Wynn works for an organization with a lot of esprit de corps. But it's got its IT challenges. In part two of my interview, Wynn talks about her plans for beefing up cybersecurity.
NASA is just now getting started in the continuous and diagnostic monitoring program offered by Department of Homeland Security. That started in October, so we are right now in the throes of getting ourselves set up to bring in the set of tools that they're providing. So far, they have been a great partner, as has been Booz Allen and the other set of contractors, in terms of evaluating where these tools need to go, what data needs to be illuminated to us as well as Department of Homeland Security. So we're in our very nascent stages of this process, but so far so good. I have the support of our highest level of NASA to do this program well and gain the cooperation. We'll be briefing many other senior managers in the agency so that my approach is that we make this an all-in approach, and that is gain understanding across the agency of the importance of this particular program. DHS was with us when we did the briefing for NASA's administrator, and then they will be there with us as a partner, as has Booz Allen. So far, so good. Roughly two months into our partnership, everything's been going very well. So I find Department of Homeland Security to be very cooperative and very collaborative in terms of doing this.
Now, all of the agencies, including NASA, are under a lot of pressure from OMB and good IT practice, I guess, to reduce the operation and maintenance costs, especially of data centers. What programs do you have going on there to try to rationalize or optimize data centers so you can have more money for those fun, innovative things?
What we're trying to do with our data centers and our report card probably for FY15 isn't going to show us in the best light, but what it doesn't show is a lot of the work that has been going on around NASA and the support to make good strategic decisions about where data centers need to be. So what we've pulled together is a decision tree, which we are beta testing right now with Jet Propulsion Lab. And what the decision tree is intended to do is to take a look at information systems, which they have about 700 in this one particular data center, and sort those information systems out to the data, really that gets down to the data, and that is in a particular system. Does this data need to reside at the Jet Propulsion Lab? And if it does, great, then we'll figure this out and its future, its near-term future, as well as it'll help inform continue to inform the data center strategy for NASA. Then some systems will find out that boy, the data really does have to stay within the custody and control of NASA itself, but it doesn't necessarily need to be at that particular center. In this instance that I'm talking about is the Jet Propulsion Lab. So then a set of systems are going to be binned in what I call stays within the custody and control of NASA. And then what I'm pretty sure we're going to find is there are going to be systems that we find that we could go to private cloud service providers such as Amazon, Microsoft, there's a whole boatload of them out there, and then we'll bin them in potentially moving that direction. And our hope is with this beta test is that we'll refine the process so that it doesn't take as long. And then in this particular example at JPL, as we call the Jet Propulsion Lab, what we'll be able to do is then make some informed decision about where our data needs to be for its use, and that will then allow us to even gain some more cost effectiveness out of the money we spend on data centers to do that. Because as you know, and as many people know, that a data center also has tentacles in facilities management. And so I am closely tied with the facility managers here, both at Jet Propulsion Lab as well as here at NASA headquarters, so that we can make an informed decision about where we need to drive, where NASA's data can reside today and in the future. And when we start to illuminate that, we're going to gain a lot more in virtualization and other activities that go on to make data centers greener, which is great to my EPA roots, but also sort of gets us a better use of taxpayer dollars.
We're speaking with Renee Wynn. She's the CIO of NASA. One more question about the data centers. And as you rationalize the data locations and so forth, will you be increasing the amount of virtualization, maybe down to even the storage networks and that kind of thing, which is the kind of the next wave of where this is all heading?
I think the answer is yes, because that's the general direction of the industry. I don't have the particular numbers in front of me to say, you know, absolutely, that's what we, that's what we're going to do. But certainly it's the direction that the data center industry is going, and so we would want to capture that moment for ourselves.
And, of course, you came to an agency that has always gotten high ratings in the Employee Viewpoint Survey for morale and a great place to work. Can you feel the energy there when you stepped in?
I absolutely can feel the energy. In fact, during my first week, Larry Sweet, the former NASA CIO, turned to me and he says, "So what do you think? And what about the differences between the agencies?" And I said to him, I said, my headline on this particular question was, at the Environmental Protection Agency, people loved the environment. I mean, who doesn't want clean water and clean air and safe communities to live in and safe chemicals to use both in your home and at schools and at your place of business? But here at NASA, people love NASA. And they make a point of they wear very proudly the number of years that they have been here at NASA. And so the energy towards getting people on Mars and supporting that particular effort and just the investment that people have in our logo is pretty inspiring. Actually, it's not pretty inspiring. It's very inspiring to be part of that. And I think that love of NASA and the love of NASA by our current administrator, Charlie Bolden, is very, very infectious. And it just spreads within everything that you do. There doesn't seem to be any bad day here at NASA, no matter what. Every problem is considered an opportunity to make great things happen.
Renee Wynn is the CIO of NASA. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.